So what can you do? What can you do realistically, you know, that takes into account what you are about? Well, here is what you can do. Ignore the activists, ignore the revolutionaries. We have to face bullets, we have to face military trials. It doesn't matter really what you do. It doesn't matter if Facebook is going to reveal my information or not. I have to assume that I'm being constantly watched, that I'm being that everything about me is public. It doesn't matter. But what matters is ordinary users who use your products to practice their agency. When you decide that they cannot decide to choose a pseudonym, then you are negating them the right to negotiate their identity. The right to negotiate your identity is, it's not in the Charter of Human Rights, but it's actually essential to most rights. Negotiated identity is very important. I get to choose whether to reveal who I am and how to reveal who I am and decide who I am on my own terms and on my own basis.
My imminent arrest, 27th November 2013, 12:28 a.m. Deja vu. I'm about to hand myself in to the authorities again on Saturday. My ever-imminent arrest is now a running joke in Egypt. Embedded post, Ahdaf Swayf's English translation of Ala Abdel Fattah's statement. Statement of my intention to hand myself in to the prosecutor's office on Saturday, midday. A charge I don't deny and an honor I don't claim. For the second time, the Office of the Public Prosecutor has sent out an arrest warrant through the media, instead of to my address, well known to them because of their history of fabricating charges against me in the eras of Mubarak, Tantawi, and Morsi. For the second time, the Office of the Public Prosecutor lets itself be a tool of government propaganda, this time on the orders of the murderer, Minister of Interior Mohammed Ibrahim, instead of the Murshid, the supreme guide of the Muslim Brotherhood. Their reason, that I incited people to demand that trials should be fair and should be the responsibility of an independent civil judiciary, as though it's bad for the prosecutor's office to respect itself and be respected by the public. It must prove its subservience to any authority that passes through this country. No difference here between a prosecutor illegitimately appointed at the instructions of the Murshid and a prosecutor correctly appointed but at the instructions of the military. The charge, it appears, is that I participated in inviting people to protest yesterday in front of the Shura Council building against placing, for the second time, an article in the Constitution legitimizing the court-martial of civilians. The strange thing is that both the prosecutor and the Ministry of Interior knew that I was present for 8 hours at First Police Station, New Cairo, in solidarity with the people arrested yesterday on the same charges. But neither the prosecutor nor the MOI ordered my arrest at the time, or demanded that I be questioned. This probably means that they intend to put on a show where I play the criminal in hiding. So despite the following facts, that I do not recognize the anti-protest law that the people have brought down as promptly as they brought down the monument to the military's massacres, that the legitimacy of the current regime collapsed with the first drop of blood shed in front of the Republican Guards Club, that any possibility of saving this legitimacy vanished when the ruling four, Sisi, Biblawi, Ibrahim, and Mansour, committed war crimes during the breakup of the Rab'a Sit-In, that the public prosecutor's office displayed crass subservience when it provided legal cover for the widest campaign of indiscriminate administrative detention in our modern history, locking up young women, injured people, old people, and children, and holding as evidence against them balloons they were carrying and t-shirts they were wearing. That the clear corruption in the judiciary is to be seen in the overly harsh sentences against students whose crime was their anger at the murder of their comrades, set against light sentences and acquittals of the uniformed murderers of those same young people. Despite all of this, I have decided to do what I've always done and hand myself in to the public prosecutor. I do not deny the charges, even though I cannot claim the honor of bringing the people onto the street to challenge the attempts to legitimize the return of the Mubarak state. And so that I do not allow their rabid dogs any excuse at all, I have officially informed the prosecutor's office by telegram number 96/381, dated today, and by letter delivered by hand to the public prosecutor, registered number 17138 for 2013. As I have informed the Attorney General for Central Cairo, telegram number 96/382, of my intention to hand myself in on Saturday, 30th November at midday to the prosecution at their Qasr al-Nil office. The protest people's voice heard needs no permit from the guard. Ala Abd al-Fattah, Cairo, 27th November 2013. Page 231. The only words I can write. 5 years ago, on what would turn out to be the last normal day of my life, I sat down at my desk in a small IT firm in Pretoria and pretended to be working while I was actually writing a short article for The Guardian. It was about why the Egyptian revolution should be taken seriously, or at least that's how I remember it. I can't get back to that article now. It's been more than a year since I had access to the internet. In Egypt, prisoners aren't even allowed a phone call, but I shouldn't complain. At least I get to see my family two or three times a month. Other political prisoners, mostly Islamists, are not allowed visits at all. On that day 5 years ago, I first engaged in the battle over the narrative of the revolution, a battle that would consume me completely for 4 years. But on that day, I wasn't even sure a revolution was happening in Egypt. I feared it would fizzle out even as I wrote about a new form of youthful pan-Arabism. It would take me another day to fully accept that it was for real, and three more before I could fly back to Cairo to join Tahrir. I moved from doubting the depth of the uprising to worrying about arriving too late and missing out on all the action. After the fall of Mubarak, the battle over narrative grew in importance. The state was forced to compromise with the revolution while trying to contain it by appropriating its story. We articulated why we continued to protest, and indeed why we ever protested at all. Are the kids who threw stones at the police revolutionaries or saboteurs? Should the prisoners who died in prison riots be counted among the martyrs of the revolution or not? What's the role of the military in the Mubarak regime? Should education continue to be free in public universities? Do we need a new constitution? If so, who should write it? And so on. I wrote and I wrote and wrote, mostly in Arabic, mostly on social media, but sometimes for a national daily. I was mostly talking to fellow revolutionaries, and my voice became increasingly cautionary. How fragile the revolutionary moment was, and how precarious our situation was, were my main themes. And yet I couldn't shake off the sheer sense of hope and possibility. Despite setbacks, our dreams continued to soar. People talk of a barrier of fear, but to me it was always like a barrier of despair. And once removed, even fear, massacres, and prisons couldn't bring it back. I did all the silly things over-optimistic revolutionaries do. I moved back to Egypt permanently, had a child, founded a startup, engaged in a series of progressive initiatives aiming at a more popular, decentralized, and participatory democracy, broke every draconian law and outdated taboo, walked into prison smiling, and walked out of it triumphant. In 2013, we started to lose the battle for narrative to a poisonous polarization between a rapidly militarized pseudo-secular statism and a viciously sectarian, paranoid form of Islamism. All I remember about 2013 is how shrill I sounded screaming, "A plague on both your houses!" How whiny and melodramatic it felt to complain about the curse of Cassandra, warning of an all-consuming fire when no one would listen. As the streets were taken over by rallies that raised the photos of policemen instead of their victims, sit-ins were filled with chants against the Shia, and Coptic conspiracies flourished. My words lost any power, and yet they continued to pour out of me. I still had a voice, even if only a handful would listen. But then the state decided to end the conflict by committing the first crime against humanity in the history of the Republic. The barriers of fear and despair would return after the Rab' al-Adawiyya massacre. Another battle over narrative would start, getting non-Islamists to accept that a massacre had happened at all, to reject the violence committed in their name. 3 months after the massacre, I was back in prison, and my prose took on a strange new role. To call in revolutionaries to admit defeat. To give up the optimism that had become dangerous in its encouragement to choose sides. A military triumphalism or an unpopular and impractical insistence on complete regime change. What we needed was all the strength we could muster to maintain some basic defense of human rights. I narrated defeat because the very language of revolution was lost to us, replaced by a dangerous cocktail of nationalist, nativist, collectivist, and post-colonialist language, appropriated by both sides of the conflict, and used to spin convoluted conspiracy theories and spread paranoia. In early 2014, it was still controversial to ask revolutionaries to engage in a human rights campaign limited to revoking the protest law and the release of political prisoners. Most still believed the revolution was winning, defining winning as either the demise or the triumph of the Muslim Brotherhood. The idea that the state of emergency was the new normal was rejected by most. Today, it seems like we won that final battle for narrative. While the state still has its supporters, their numbers are shrinking rapidly, especially among the youth. Most people are no longer debating the nature of the events of the summer of 2013. The coup versus revolution debate is passé. Even Sisi supporters don't really believe that prosperity is coming soon. It's harder to gauge the sentiment among supporters of the Islamists. Sympathy with their plight is certainly increasing, but faith in their ability to organize an effective, unified front against the regime is probably negligible. Despair prevails. I spent most of 2014 in prison, yet I still had lots of words. My audience was much diminished, my message not one of hope, and yet it felt important to remind people that even after admitting defeat, we can still resist, that going back to the margins we fought from during Mubarak's time was acceptable, as long as we continued to fight for basic human rights. But by early 2015, as I heard my sentence, I had nothing left to say to any public. I could only write personal letters. The revolution, and indeed Egypt itself, would slowly fade out even from those letters. And by autumn 2015, even my own personal words dried up. It's been months since I wrote a letter, and more than a year since I've written an article. I have nothing to say. No hopes, no dreams, no fears, no warnings, no insights. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Like a child showing signs of autism, I'm regressing and losing my words. My ability to imagine an audience and mentally model the impact of my words on them. I try to remember what I wrote for The Guardian 5 years ago on the last normal day of my life. I try to imagine who read that article and what impact it had on them. I try to remember what it was like when tomorrow seemed so full of possibility. And my words seem to have the power to influence, if only slightly, what that tomorrow would look like. I can't really remember that. Now tomorrow will be exactly like today, and yesterday, and all the days preceding, and all the days following. I have no influence over anything. But one thing I do remember, one thing I know, is that the sense of possibility was real. It may have been naive to believe that our dream could come true, but it was not foolish to believe that another world was possible. It really was. Or at least that's how I remember it. Written in Turab Prison, published on 24th January 2016 in The Guardian and Mada Masr.
We are calling for the immediate release of Alaa Abd El Fattah. Join us on freealaa.net to find out how you can help.